You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We are now 10 months into the COVID-19 pandemic here in Idaho. We are still seeing more cases and deaths. In fact, the United States saw the most deaths in one day due to this virus just this week. Here's the good news, though. Vaccines are being distributed across our country. Here in our state, the number of Idahoans who have received both vaccine shots against COVID-19 as of today is sitting at 7,280, with another 28,016 people who have gotten their first immunization shot. Two shots are needed for the vaccine. Since Idaho Matters was preempted yesterday due to national coverage of President Trump's second impeachment, we still wanted to bring you an abbreviated version of our weekly Doctor's Roundtable because so many people have questions. So if you have one, email us at idahomatters@boisestate.edu. And joining us today is Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System and a current member of Idaho's Coronavirus Task Force. Hi, Dr. Pate.
Hey, Gemma. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too. So first, I'd like your thoughts on how the vaccine rollout is going in Idaho, because we've also received new guidelines about who can now get the vaccine.
Yes, and those are very welcomed. You know, the vaccine distribution rollout has certainly been disappointing. The federal government, to much fanfare, talked about this Operation Warp Speed, which certainly this summer I've been very complimentary of. I thought that was a great idea. However, it's disappointing that with all this time and preparation, all these resources, they tell us they'll have 100 million people vaccinated by the end of the year. Then they revise that down to 40. Then they revise it down to 20 million. And then they don't even make that. Mm. So it's certainly disappointing. What that impact has been is that states have gotten a lot less vaccine than what they were planning for. Mm-hmm. Further, all this time, the states have been telling the federal government, we need guidance. We need to know how to do this. We need resources. We don't have money to do this. We don't have people to do this. And so, and very little of that got addressed. So here we are. Idaho has actually done a better job relative to most states in the country. The national average is administering somewhere around 28% of the distributed doses. For Idaho, we're up in the mid-30s, so we're doing better. But I think one of the problems is this whole distribution system has been a bit over-engineered. What I mean is, we've got these tiers and sub-tiers, and it gets a little bit complicated. It's not as complicated for some of the places that are giving the vaccine to distribute it to its own employees, but then trying to comply with the guidance and agreements that they entered into with the federal government, when they start trying to provide vaccine to people outside of their employees, then it's creating a bureaucratic nightmare because, for example, if you are going to come and get the vaccine and say you're in a particular group, then you've got to bring a W-2 or a pay stub or some kind of evidence that you actually work there. I think that's a little much. And I think we're putting too much pressure on people that we just want them to be getting the vaccine. And I do think we certainly should have priority groups. But frankly, every time we get somebody vaccinated, we're just making it all safer for all of us. So there needs to be some happy middle, and I don't think we've hit that spot yet.
Well, and in particular here in Idaho, when we are fully aware of the fact that we have a very large anti-vaccination group of people. So with that said, are we potentially leaving vaccine on the table? Because we know that how these vaccines have to be stored. Once you open them, you have to use them. So if we have these tiered groups, are we potentially leaving vaccine on the table instead of saying, you may not be in this group, but maybe come in and get the vaccine. Does that make sense?
It does. And that is certainly a risk and a concern. Fortunately, that's not been much of an issue for us in Idaho. There have been issues in some of the other states. We've had very little wastage in Idaho. And I think providers are very cognizant of the fact that they need to take great care with this vaccine. And so when they are ending up with extra vaccine at the end of the day or end of the week, you know, they certainly are calling on other people to come in and get vaccinated. But you know, it's that fact that that's happening that means we actually could administer it to more people. And that's why I'm very pleased that Governor Little announced we are opening this up. We're going to do 65 and older. And I think that's really important. And, you know, I personally would go a little further after a few weeks or a month of getting the high priority people, which we definitely should. I'd just set up some mass vaccination tents and either let people sign up on a computer program that would prioritize them and give them an appointment slot, or just take people first come, first serve, and let's just get this vaccine out there and administered. But I do think the state is taking the right steps. They're taking steps that are going to make this much better. And we're just off to a slow start.
So before we get to listener questions, I have one more. I'm curious about one more thought, and that is President-elect Joe Biden's plan to roll out all of the vaccine that we have instead of holding some back. Your thoughts on whether this is a good idea or not?
I don't think it's a good idea. I understand why he would want to do that. But unless we have confidence in our vaccine supply chain, which right now I do not, and I don't think the federal government's earned that trust, you know, if we had that trust, I would think this is a good move. But the fear I have is, you know, this is one more instance where we're not technically following the science. And I think when we don't follow the science, it does something to the credibility of our leaders, and it does something to the credibility of the science. Yes, you want to get a lot of people vaccinated, but if you propose this, that look, the most important thing is let's just get everybody their first shot so we've got them protected. Well, the science doesn't prove that. The what the science shows, and it's not good science, we don't have enough data. But after the first shot, it appears that your protection level is going to be somewhere in the 50% of efficacy range, which I'm not sure that would have ever gotten FDA authorization if that's how the vaccine was. So that's a mistake. And I think it sends a confusing message to people. Oh, I just need to get one shot and then I'm protected, when in fact, it's extremely important that people get the second shot and that they, you know, we don't know how long you could spread this out. So it's best to follow the science and what the studies are. And so I would just get, you know, instead of doing what he's doing, what I would do is I'd sit down and talk to the vaccine manufacturers. I'd ask them, how much more vaccine can we get? What's limiting you? Are there things about your own supply chain that you need? For example, we heard that a lot of them were having trouble just getting the special glass vials you need to put the vaccine in. You could then implement the Defense Production Act, increase the production of that. And so I think the real answer is don't just dump a lot of vaccine on the states. Let's increase the production and distribution. And states are already showing us that they can't get the vaccine out to arms as efficiently. If they're only administering 28% of what they're getting now, how is giving them more vaccine going to improve that? So I'm not a big fan.
So Melissa in Boise just sent this question in. It kind of goes back to what you were talking about the first vaccine. She says, if a person gets the first vaccine and then gets COVID, should they still get the second vaccine or do they need to wait?
Well, that's a great question, and we don't know the answer. I think the answer is likely to be they should go ahead. What we're currently saying is if somebody got COVID before the first vaccine, what we'd like them to do is wait about 90 days to get vaccinated. Now, on this is a variation on this. This is the person who's gotten the first dose and they got COVID. We haven't answered that question. Based on what we currently know, I would say we should march on. But that is something we're going to still have to find the answer to.
Melody sent us this question. She says, I plan on getting the vaccine. I'm 77. I have read that most clinical trials are done on young white males as they tend to be the ones who volunteer. So I'm wondering if there was a concerted effort to recruit people in my age group in the clinical trials, since we are the ones who are the most impacted.
Yeah. And how old did you say she was, Gemma?
She's 77.
Okay. So yes, in both of these vaccine trials, there was a significant effort to try to get older people. She mentions about kind of a male predominance. There is for both of these trials, but it's just a percent or so. It pretty much was even women and males, but there were slightly more males in both trials. But the good news is, if you look at the group over 65, both trials had a quarter of the study participants were 65 or older. I don't think that Pfizer quantified how many were over 75, but I think Moderna did. And if I remember correctly, it's about 2.5% were actually over 75. But again, more than a quarter over 65. So I feel pretty good about that.
Let's take a quick break. We'll have more conversation with Dr. Pate right after this. More Idaho Matters right now as we continue our conversation with Dr. David Pate. If you have a question, get it in. Email us, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. Dr. Pate, Nolly has this question. She says, I think we can all agree that we want to put teachers at a high priority vaccination. Will public health officials, do we know, come to schools and vaccinate teachers, or will they have to do it on their own at a doctor's office?
We don't know yet. My suspicion is it'll be the latter, that they'll have to go to a doctor's office or a hospital, just because there's a lot of logistics to storing the vaccine, the computer systems that we have to enter all the information in, that kind of stuff. But it's certainly possible. And it may vary in every public health district, because the seven public health districts are all each separately responsible for how they distribute and administer the vaccine. Some public health districts are going to administer the vaccine themselves, and some are not going to do it at all. And so the teachers might want to check with their public health department or their school administration. There is going to be a great announcement, I believe on Tuesday, where the folks that have been heading up our vaccine program are going to unveil a website where teachers and anybody else can go on to search for where they could get the vaccine. They can qualify by what day do they want to get the vaccine, what time do they want to get the vaccine, and then the computer program will tell them what are their options for getting that. They can even choose which vaccine they want to get. So I think that will be a big help but it's probably going to be an individual decision in every health district whether people will be coming to schools or whether teachers will need to go to a vaccination center.
But that is such good news about this website, because so many questions that we have gotten are in regards to how in the world do we figure out how, when, and where do we get a vaccine? So hopefully this rollout will answer all those questions for folks.
Yeah, it's been very frustrating for everybody, but I have seen this demonstration of this website. It looks very user-friendly and looks like it's going to be a tremendous help based on what I've seen.
And we should note that teachers pre-K through 12 have now, they're also in this next group. So if you are an educator or know an educator, do realize that you can now sign up to get the vaccine. So good news there for our teachers. Speaking of education and teachers and kids, Dr. Pate, so, you know, we have these tiers, right, of when people can be vaccinated. And this is only, I think, even when we go to the general public, it's only 16 and older, correct? And is that because we just don't know enough yet about the vaccine, or because, at least originally, children weren't as affected by the virus?
No, it's the former. One vaccine is the authorization is you must be 18 or older. The other vaccine is you can be 16 or older. And that's because of the groups that the vaccines were initially tested on. And that's certainly typical. We don't generally, when we have a brand new vaccine, brand new technology, we don't generally want to experiment on kids. So we try it out on adults first. Then once it's determined that it's safe and effective, then we do the studies on younger kids. And those studies are underway right now. And I don't think they'll take near as long because we don't have to repeat everything. We just have to figure out, you know, what is the right dose for kids? Should it be a lower dose or the same dose? What reactions do they seem to have, if they're any different than what we're seeing in adults? And is it just as effective? And I think we'll have that, all that data. And I think you'll see that the FDA will revise the age limit down significantly, probably by the end of the school year. So for parents, I mean, it may be sooner, but I think parents need to think about their to-do list for this summer is get their kids vaccinated, because that's the way we're going to have them back in classrooms in the fall.
Wow, that's really great news to realize that our kiddos could be getting this vaccine, because that's, frankly, as a mom, been one of my concerns is, all right, I can get vaccinated, my husband can get vaccinated, but when do my kids get it? So I think that will put a lot of parents' minds at ease. Mark has a question. And I think a lot of people are wondering this now that we're seeing different variants of the virus, Dr. Pate. So he's wondering about the transmission. He said, you know, at first we were told it was surfaces, then it was droplets, and then it was aerosol. So what's the story now when it comes to how it's transmitted?
Well, the first thing is, let's make clear, it's not exactly that sequence. In other words, we have not ruled out droplet transmission. In fact, we believe droplet transmission is at least one of the top two ways, if it's not the top way that it's transmitted. So droplet and airborne are the two major ways this virus is transmitted. We did have concerns about surfaces at the very beginning, especially because I know you'll remember, but many people will remember these studies showing how long you could go on a surface and then recover the virus. But the problem is, just because you can recover the virus from these surfaces, you know, and some of them were reported up to like 3 days. Well, just because you can recover the virus and grow it in a culture doesn't mean that's enough virus that it can infect you. And what, and so obviously, as a matter of precaution, we warned people, be careful of surfaces, clean them frequently. And it's still a good idea to do. We all want to keep our homes clean and surfaces clean, because there's certainly lots of other germs. But It has not proved to be a major factor in the transmission of this virus. So right now, while we still include it as a possible mode of transmission, the two things that everybody should worry about, droplet, that's why we use the 6-foot rule, and that's why we encourage masks, and airborne. And that's why we encourage people not to be indoors with people they don't live with. And if they are, to be wearing masks.
Right. I mean, still the same advice that we have been hearing for, frankly, almost a year.
Yep.
So Denise has an interesting question. She says, if we don't know if the vaccine currently available keeps the vaccinated individuals from getting a symptomatic infection, which could then be transmitted, how is herd immunity going to be reached with the vaccine?
Well, it's a very, very good question. So the first thing is, with both of these vaccines, we do know they are extremely effective at preventing someone who's been vaccinated from getting sick from COVID. And we have shown that even if you're in that 5% of people where you could still get infected and sick, you are tremendously less likely to get severely ill, where you would have to be hospitalized or where we would even be fearing whether you would survive. So the vaccine is extremely effective. What we don't know is that, Jim, if you and I were doing this interview in person and I was vaccinated, however, I'd been around somebody with COVID, and so I got the virus in my nose and throat, but it's not making me sick, could I transmit that virus to you? We do not know the answer to that question. We likely will later this year. We'll know the answer to that, but we don't know that for now. That's why we say everybody who gets vaccinated, you still have to do all these same measures for now till we get to that herd immunity. So then her question is, will we get to herd immunity? Frankly, our bigger concern than that is what the new variants mean. We do know that the UK variant is in the United States. We so far, to my knowledge, haven't seen any of the South African variant in the United States, but we do have the UK variant in at least 9 states. And it will, over time, probably become the dominant strain, just like one of the previous mutations did. So the problem, if you have a more contagious strain, is that threshold we've been banting around, is it 60%, is it 80% to get to herd immunity? It goes up. If it's the more contagious the virus is, the higher that threshold. So what we could be talking about is, where as before, when we were talking a few months ago, maybe if we got 70, 75% of Idahoans protected with vaccine, we could reach herd immunity. Now that number certainly could be more in the range of 80 to 85%. But to her point, if people who are vaccinated can carry this virus and transmit it to somebody else, that does work against the herd immunity, which is intended to protect those around us who aren't vaccinated or can't be vaccinated. And so, just as you were asking me, Jim, about children, let's say that, yes, it comes out this summer that school-age children can be vaccinated, but maybe your newborn can't, then if we can carry this, then that newborn's still going to be at risk. And so that will hurt our efforts at herd immunity. But right now, the big thing is everybody get vaccinated, please, as many as possible, because even that will just slow down the transmission. And even if you can carry it, it's just going to be much less likely you're going to be exposed and are carrying it.
One last question before I let you go in regards to the vaccine. And I hate to make the comparison to the flu because of all of the non-factual information that was out there about it. With that said, we get a flu shot every year, right? Because the strains change. Do you think in a way, because as we see new variants of COVID, that will be similar in the sense of, look, every year you get a COVID shot and you get a flu shot?
It is possible. Let me tell you why it's possible we might not have to do it every year. First of all, one of the things that drives the mutation rate is the transmission rate. So the more we pass this virus around, the more likely it's going to mutate. So if we can get really good uptake of the vaccine across the world and really slow down the transmission of this virus, then it's not going to mutate nearly as much as it is now. And it may not be an ongoing threat, or it may not be an ongoing threat that is going to necessitate us getting vaccinated every year. The second thing is, even with the mutations we've seen so far, this vaccine looks like it continues to be effective. And so if we can get high levels of uptake of vaccination and decrease the rate of mutation, and the only mutations we're seeing are still covered by the vaccine, then it's possible. We don't know yet how long this vaccine is going to last, but it is possible that it could be a year, it could be 2 years. It might. Some people even believe it may be something we only need to get every 3 years. Hmm. But the more we get vaccinated, the more likely that is to benefit us.
Well, I'll be the first in line when it's my turn, I'll tell you that. I want to thank you so much for coming in and always being willing to answer listener questions. Our guest today, Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System and a current member of Idaho's Coronavirus Task Force. Always appreciate your time.
Thanks, Gemma.
Thanks. More Idaho Matters next.